WGTD is supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Support for The Morning Show comes to you from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, a proud supporter of WGTD's Morning Show. And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. The haunting sound of this Appalachian carol, I Wonder As I Wander. This is one of the pieces of music that is going to be part of a very special event coming up on Sunday, the 21st of December, called The Longest Night, remembering the members of our community who have died homeless. There are events like this that will be going on all across the country, including one in downtown Racine, with a gathering at Monument Square at 4 o'clock, and then a choral service of remembrance, which will be presented by the Choral Arts Society, whose voices we were just hearing under the direction of James Schatzman. And we're going to be spending a few minutes of today's morning show talking about this event and the concerns which prompt it to be created and presented to the community. We have with us in our studios Jim Schatzman, who is the longtime artistic director of the Choral Arts Society, and Nick Berudian, who has been assisting him in a number of different capacities during this current season and who has done a great deal of the organization and coordination of this upcoming event on Sunday, December 21st. And one of the agencies that is a participant and a beneficiary, in a sense, of this event is the Hospitality Center. And its director, Kevin Stewart, is joining us via telephone. So a warm welcome to Jim Schatzman, Nick Berudian, and Kevin Stewart.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you, Greg.
Good to have you here. And Kevin, are you still with us?
I am. Good morning, and thank you.
Good to have you here. Nick, you were telling me before we went on the air a little bit about kind of the national scope of this event. I mean, that this reaches far beyond what's going to occur in downtown Racine. Say a word about that.
The National Coalition for the Homeless is the primary instigator and promoter for this umbrella, the movement of these events that take place, as you said, in cities all over the country, certainly in every big city. When I was living in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, which is not a big city, we had one of these.
An event like this?
An event like this, a gathering of the churches in Prairie du Chien and the leaders of those churches and members and others in the community to recognize there it wasn't homeless persons that had died in the year, but to make aware in a town like that there is homelessness. That was the issue there. And coming back to Racine, where I grew up, Jim and I were speaking about ways that music touches lives and that the Choral Arts Society serves in the community and the reality that they share this space with the hospitality center. Mm. Somehow, I forget if it was even your idea or mine. But we realized that music could play a part in that kind of event, mm. and hopefully, we hope draw awareness to the problem of homelessness in Racine.
Very good. Yeah, Jim, you were saying that it's often kind of a poignant situation or scenario when you are about to, for instance, begin a rehearsal of the Choral Arts Society at St. Luke's Episcopal.
Well, we've been sharing the space for a couple of years now, and the Hospitality Center has started doing overnights to accommodate people who, in spite of all of our best efforts, are still homeless and out on the street. We've noticed over the time that when we're rehearsing, very often folks will come in and just have a seat and just listen for a while. They just quietly come in and sit in the back, and sometimes they bring a book, or sometimes they just sit and listen to the gorgeous sounds. And I guess I sometimes take for granted that every Tuesday, every rehearsal, I get a chance to hear these wonderful voices putting these beautiful sounds into the universe. And then not everybody has access to that. That's not necessarily part of the homeless agenda, is arts activities. Mm. And so it's become rather poignant to see them just sitting and listening and then sharing with some of them after rehearsal. Mm.
Kevin, since we were talking about the Hospitality Center, let's hear a little bit more about what it is and what it offers to the whole community, including what they offer to the homeless.
The Hospitality Center started in May of 2011 to meet a need in Racine to be a friend, a drop-in center for anyone and everyone, especially everyone who is homeless, near homeless, alone, lonely, or mentally ill. So we're a place where friendships are formed, smiles are seen, laughter is heard, sometimes tears are shed, and hands are held. Where relationships are formed and we care about and for one another. We built the Hospitality Center in early 2011 off a church coffee model idea. And we served an average of 17 people week one. We quickly grew into Racine's largest meal program, and we now serve on average 1,000 meals a week. We also offer seasonal shelter. A couple of winters ago, Reuben showed up at our door. He had been outside all night in midwinter. He will tell you that he could not feel his feet. I tell you that he was purple, and he was shaking, not shivering. And we said that this just can't be, that there is room in the inn. And so we launched emergency shelter a couple of winters ago. We quickly transitioned to seasonal shelter. And so this year so far, we've been open about 39 nights, 37 nights in a row, and have helped to feed and shelter and provide safety for 43 persons distressed and need and most vulnerable. So we provide hospitality without agenda. We care about one another. We care for one another, seasonal shelter, and much more.
What is your sense of the scope of this problem, the extent of homelessness, and in particular, is this something that is getting worse, that is an increasingly widespread problem, or are we finding ways to, in a sense, cope with it, to find solutions for people, or is this very much with us, and if anything, a growing problem?
I tend to think that this is a growing problem. The poor will always be with us. But based upon our experience and the request for assistance, for services, for blankets, for pillows, for shelter, those requests continue to increase. So certainly our brothers and sisters who experience homelessness, I am of the opinion, and it is a subjective opinion, that problem of being homeless continues to increase, accompanying that is loneliness and being alone. And that comes by being outside in the cold of winter, but there's a coldness of alone and loneliness that comes with that.
Nick Broody, and you were saying that that this event on Sunday is in part to draw attention to the issue of homelessness, but it's also very much a specific sort of memorial service. Tell us more about that and why it was thought that that was an important component to include in this remembrance.
At a funeral or a memorial service, we often give honor to the life of the person who's died. We remember what a gift they were to us, and especially those that they loved. And it's easy to take for granted what a luxury that is. That not everyone even has a community, a church or a synagogue or a place of worship, any kind of community that will remember them that way. And that's especially so for many who suffer from homelessness, because it's usually accompanied, it's often accompanied by other problems that other people don't want to touch. And we as a community, as a larger community, suffer together from that, from the ignorance of not even knowing these people. Part of the reason I'm glad for this event is that I think music has a way of bringing people together that otherwise would not be together. And that's the case for someone who's suffering from mental illness or addiction or any number of ills that often accompany homelessness, and a lot of the rest of the community. And so part of the awareness happens on the poster, right? You see the poster in the coffee shop, and you realize, oh, there's homeless people in the community. But I think the more important kind of awareness is, I hope, people coming to hear this music, this service, and to pray with us, and to sit down next to someone that they don't know, and come to realize that we are in this community together, that we have a communal responsibility for each other, and to make sure that others are taken care of, especially those who are really, truly vulnerable.
You were saying that one of the kind of complicated points here is, first of all, amassing a list of who among the homeless that have died over the past year, just to find those names, to know those names, and then also kind of the question of whether or not these people should be remembered by name. And it sounds like you had to kind of collectively confront some interesting questions and concerns there.
Yeah, we came face to face with there is a confrontation. There is an opposition between, say, human dignity and human well-being. our purpose here in raising awareness is to help more people be fed and warm and sheltered. And in doing this, we draw attention to the problem, which is a problem not just of an individual who has died, but a problem relating, as I said before, to the community, to their friends and family and others of us who failed to help them when they were alive. And so there's this kind of embarrassment that goes along with the possibility of somebody sitting in the pew and knowing one of these names. I mean, I think it's almost certain that will be the case.
Kevin Stewart, I noticed that when you were talking about the hospitality center, you were very careful to use a couple of different names, and I suspect that you are anxious that people not just think about the homeless with a capital H and kind of a faceless, nameless swarm, but that we think of these as individual people, because that's how you come to know them, as you minister to them, I'm sure.
They're my friends. We will remember this coming Sunday Richard, who was most commonly known as Moses in the Racine community. Hmm. Moses lived with and suffered with mental illness. He found himself living as one who's identified as homeless. He died this past year. And his family was hesitant to have a memorial service, thinking, would anybody come? Doubting anybody would be interested. St. Luke's Episcopal Church inside is a large facility. I preached at Moses' funeral. It was standing room only. Hmm. And stories were told during, before, and after of the impact that Moses had on lives for years as he pedaled a bicycle laden and covered with bags of sandwiches and food that he would take to people in need. We remember how Moses and how so many others who didn't have a dime to their name fed us, ministered to us, and cared for so many. Hmm.
Jim, in your work with the Racine Vocational Ministries, I suspect you also come to know some of these people who have been or are otherwise destined maybe to be homeless at some point in their lives. Tell us about that.
Absolutely, and this is what kind of connects Kevin and I in a very profound way. I mean, we have shared clients. We have worked with people together who are struggling to put their lives back together. We have helped a number of people over the course of the years who have come through the hospitality center to find their way back to employment or find their way back to community in a little stronger ways. Certainly one of the things we talk about at Racine Vocational Ministry, it's not just about getting a job, it's about reconnecting to the community in healthy ways. It's about bringing families back together. A lot of the folks who come to see us, their families have been devastated. They've not been able to support themselves. They've kind of tapped out everybody around them. The stressor on a family to say, gosh, every time Fred shows up, you know, his need is so desperate. And families kind of sometimes give up. They get frustrated because they can't sustain things. So it's about helping people get fully integrated back in and about finding, as Kevin said, finding that place where they can find community, where they can be welcomed at a Sunday meal, where they can have somebody to play cards with once or twice or three times a week. The kinds of things that we all do that seem so natural and so
Support comes from Kenosha Winter Harbor Market. Featured vendors in this, the last market until early March, include Liz the Bread Lady, offering a variety of handmade loaves, including whole wheat flaxseed and cocoa coffee caraway rye. Saturday.
Go to a church service to get a hot dog. It's just what I love about what they do is they're just welcoming people in, and our ministries have overlapped on numerous occasions.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today with Jim Schatzman, Nick Berutian, and Kevin Stewart about an event that's coming up this Sunday, the 21st of December, called The Longest Night, remembering the members of our community who have died homeless. The event will feature a couple of different components, including an all-night vigil and a and a concert presentation of the Choral Arts Society and a choral service of remembrance. Nick Brudian, I know you've done a lot of the coordination of this. What are we talking about in terms of bringing people together, and what kind of response have you had to what has been the response to the invitation to be part of this?
At this point, minimal. We've publicized using posters and emails to area organizations that deal with the homeless, and to area churches and religious houses of worship. I don't know who's coming. I'm hoping a lot do.
I know the mayor is coming. Tell us about what's going to happen at this initial gathering point, which is at 4 o'clock.
This is something that Kevin may want to speak to, but I'll answer that briefly. At 4 o'clock, we gather on Monument Square in a kind of act of solidarity. It's a little act, but we gather in the cold. I assume it will be pretty cold on December 21st. And people may wonder why. The reason is that we're remembering people for whom this is reality, cold outside. And we'll hear words from the mayor of Racine and from Kevin Stewart, who's with us here, and from Gay Lorenzen, who is the chair. Correct me if Jim or Kevin, but I think she's the chair of the Continuum of Care.
That's correct.
Which is a consortium of service agencies in Racine.
Mm-hmm. What about the service then, Jim, at 5, the actual choral service of remembrance? Tell us about the kind of music that you've chosen to draw together for that.
Actually, it's going to be kind of interesting here. We may have not communicated this very clearly, but Nick is conducting this program. Nick has brought together singers from Choral Arts and from folks who have soloed with us over the last couple of years. So it's a chamber choir of small people, and the tone of the music really is consistent with the holidays, but it's also consistent with the idea that there was no room in the inn. You know, the Holy Family did not have a place, and ended up in a barn. And I think this is incredibly poignant. And Nick has done a masterful job. We've certainly had some dialogue, but Nick has done the legwork on this. An absolutely masterful job of finding pieces that tie to the holiday season, the issue of the Holy Family and some of the things that they went through, and the issues of poverty and how that aligns with a person's spirituality. And so I'm going to hand the ball over to Nick to talk a little bit about some of the music he selected and why.
Thank you, Jim. Those are kind words. I did choose some Christmas carols. I think many people will be in that zone, in that kind of frame of mind, and yet Christmas has the tendency, if you watch TV or listen to the radio or kind of walk down the street at all, it's for a lot of people more about buying stuff, and it's easy to forget that Mary and Joseph showed up in their hometown and their own family didn't have room for them when Jesus was born. It's easy to forget that the Holy Family was forced into exile immediately after Jesus was born because of institutional and governmental persecution. And so a couple of the songs that we're singing are familiar, I hope, to many people, but maybe not in this context. Away in a Manger, I Wonder as I Wander, Silent Night, all deal with sort of the dark aspects of Christmas, and then there's others that are probably less familiar. loved by few, well-loved by probably only a few. We're singing a Chris Johnson arrangement of Lost in the Night and an old Welsh carol entitled Poverty.
Mm.
We're singing several anthems from the Renaissance period that deal with death and the rest and the peace of death in the sight of God. We're also singing several hymns. I thought it was necessary for a community building event. I can think of no better way to get to know your neighbor than to sing full voice standing next to them. Hmm. So we're singing some hymns that I hope people will join in heartily.
Hmm. Kevin Stewart, tell us how this event is part of and benefits and springs from the Hospitality Center.
It comes forth out of relationship with Racine Vocational Ministry and Jim Schatzman and Hospitality Center and the relationship that Jim and I have of working cooperatively and collaboratively in support of those who need our help. And going back to what Jim was talking about earlier, as we provide at the Hospitality Center shelter. And the men and women who listen to the choral arts practice and the music, we have seen, Jim and I have seen, as we sat and watched, the words, the surety of the following words, these words come true. Music touches the most tender chords of human existence. So as we thought about the longest night and move into it, my hope is that it will be an evening of experiencing how music does, in fact, touch the most tender chords of human existence. I think that we will be speaking a language for which there are no words. It's a language of music. It is a language of feeling. It's a language of caring and of love. And that language is felt, I hope, and I invite people to experience and to feel.
I don't think have yet mentioned the fact that once this choral service of remembrance is complete, then ensues what is being called an all-night vigil in the sanctuary of St. Luke's. Tell us what that is, although in some respects it's a very simple thing, yet a very important, profound thing.
It is simple, and in the idea that of traditional vigil, the sanctuary at St. Luke's will be open throughout the night for individuals or persons who want to remain for 5 seconds, 5 minutes, or 5 hours to be in the presence of the space to pray as they so choose or to enjoy the quietness. These are busy times. Arguably, December is the busiest time of the year. It provides opportunity to stop and to be still and to listen as our hearts are moved. So that is part of a traditional idea of a vigil. But we will continue and hold vigil in a different way, that when the liturgy, the service is concluded, we will invite and extend opportunities to go into the fellowship hall, where all will be gathered and will provide opportunities for local service providers to be there to answer questions about the services they provide. Our overnight shelter will be running. There will be a blend of community members that perhaps this may be the first and hopefully not the only opportunity to come together and to make new friends and to build some bridges and to break down some walls, a wall of fear or misunderstanding. So we will hold vigil quietly. We will hold it in dialogue, in talking, and in sharing.
Very good. Nick Brudine, just remind us one more time about all that happens on the 21st. Just sketch the most important events so people can just, we can make certain that they understand exactly what will happen and when.
Gladly. 4 p.m., you're invited to join us gathering on Monument Square in solidarity with the members of our community that are homeless. We gather in the cold. We gather near sundown to on the longest night of the year to stand with them. We'll hear words from the mayor of Racine, from Kevin Stewart, the director of the Hospitality Center, and from Gay Lorenzen, coordinator of the Continuum of Care, the consortium of service agencies in Racine. After hearing from them, we'll sort of march or process in mass half a block away from Monument Square to St. Luke's Episcopal Church, where at 5 p.m. We'll hold a choral service of remembrance. We'll hear the names of those members of Racine who have died homeless and recognize that loss, our loss. And we'll hear from the Choral Arts Society providing anthems and songs of remembrance and songs of hope, too, songs of light in the midst of this darkness. We'll sing together some hymns. After the service of remembrance, all are invited to share in refreshments in the Hospitality Center at St. Luke's Episcopal Church, same building, and to hear from more of the service providers in Racine how to be involved, how perhaps to volunteer or to make a difference, or even how to receive some of the services available for those who need them. Some of us will remain at St. Luke's throughout the night until morning in all-night vigil and prayer, continuing our stand of solidarity with those who sleeping at the Hospitality Center that night and those who have not such a comfortable place to sleep.
The longest night this Sunday, the 21st of December, in the heart of downtown Racine. And to finish out, Jim, there were two pieces of music, I Wonder As I Wander, with which we began, and this second piece is?
In Soul, Lord Jesus, Quickly Come, which is another part of this. I think people long for comfort and consummation in times of stress and difficulty, and I think this tune reflects that feeling very much.
Very good. And as we hear it sung by the Choral Arts Society, we want to thank you, Jim Schatzman, and Nick Brudian, and from the Choral Arts Society, and Kevin Stewart from the Hospitality Center. Thank you for joining us today on the morning show to tell our listeners about this very important event coming up on Sunday, December 21st, The Longest Night.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Sing, holy, holy, holy.
That was the Choral Arts Society under the direction of James Schatzman. It's 8:45. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. Here's part two of today's program from the Morning Show Archives. Several occasions I've had the great pleasure of speaking with Brad Meltzer. The first time, actually, about a graphic novel he took part in involving many of the heroes of DC Comics, and then more recently talking about books he had written about heroes for his son, heroes for his daughter, and now focusing on a very specific hero or heroine, namely Rosa Parks, in a really lovely children's book called I Am Rosa Parks. And I'm very excited to speak with Brad Meltzer about Rosa Parks, her legacy, and what it was like to try to take this story and share it with young readers in this particular way, in this lovely book called I Am Rosa Parks, a dial book for young readers from Penguin. Brad Meltzer, we welcome you back to the Morning Show.
Always good to be back. Thanks so much.
Good to be talking to you. And it's always great, of course, to remember the legendary Rosa Parks. Tell us briefly about your own connection to this story. When do you first remember even knowing about Rosa Parks?
You know, the book is dedicated to my grandmother, who passed away a couple years ago, and it has to be from her. You know, my family was not political at all. My dad used to not vote because he thought it would make him get jury duty. That's how political my family was, which was an insane thing in my eyes, but that was how he did it. And it was my grandmother who was the political one and kind of told us these stories. And, you know, for me, the stories, yes, of course, in the book we tell the stories that you know about Rosa Parks, but the goal is to teach our kids even the stories they don't know. We show kids when Rosa Parks was herself a child. So you see that when Rosa Parks was 11 years old, a boy on roller skates came racing by and shoved her down to knock her over and bully her. And Rosa Parks popped back up and shoved the boy back. Now, the boy was white. Rosa Parks, of course, was black. And at the time, you didn't do such things. So this white mother of the boy comes racing over, gets in Rosa Parks' face and says, listen, you know, I'm going to have you put in jail forever. And when you're 11 years old and some woman's yelling at you, you know, most kids would go running. Rosa Parks stands up for herself in that moment and says, listen, your son picked this fight. I just don't want him bothering me anymore. And sure enough, that mother and that son never pick on Rosa Parks or bother her again. And I want my daughter to hear that story. I want my sons to hear that story, that sometimes you have to stand up to the bully. And in fact, the amazing part is a couple months ago when my son was being bullied, my older son said to my younger son, you need to be like Rosa Parks. You need to stand up to that bully. And my younger son said, yeah, I need to be like Rosa Parks. And I love the idea that to my young son, Rosa Parks is as vital today as she's ever been.
Mm. As you are painting the picture of the kind of life that she was living as a young person in the segregated South, we're reminded about the specter of white and colored elevators and white and colored drinking fountains. And I love the little moment when you show the very young Rosa Parks walking up to a so-called colored drinking fountain with a really interesting expectation, which proves not to be true. Tell our listeners about this image.
Yeah, this was actually something that I found. Rosa Parks actually believed when she was younger than when she saw the words colored water fountain, that it meant that the water came out in multicolors. So you see in the picture a rainbow water fountain is coming out. The water is rainbow colored. And, of course, that's not what colored means at all. But those were her own thoughts. We didn't make that up. We actually pulled it from her own words. And I just, you know, for my kids, the amazing part is they don't know these stories. They never saw this. And to see that this little girl could overcome those obstacles, that she could find the strength within herself, that's what I want to leave for my kids. And the goal for us long term, it's never just about one book. You know, we're doing I Am Albert Einstein in September. We're doing I Am Jackie Robinson in January. And the goal long term is we want to build a library and help you build a library for your kids, for your grandkids, for your nieces and nephews, that you can give them real heroes that they can look up to. Because you know what? We're a country right now that needs heroes.
Right. One thing that was interesting in the way you told this story was that Rosa, as a youngster, has sort of a sidekick, some young boy who is kind of side by side with her. And the thing that's sort of interesting is that this young black boy will be experiencing the same thing that Rosa is, namely segregated schools, and he will react as though certain things are great, and Rosa is the one who sees the injustice. Something like the fact that the school year at a black school would tend to be much shorter than the school year for the white school, because all these blacks would be busy working in the field for part of the year. And I thought that was an intriguing point to make, that sometimes two people can experience the same reality, and both of them might not even realize, to the same extent at least, that they are being dealt an injustice. And that seems to be something about which Rosa Parks, even early in her life, had exceptional clarity about.
Oh, no question about it. And that's also there because, you know, our readers here are little kids. And when I tell my kids, my little kids, my 12-year-old, my 8-year-old, even my 6-year-old, when I tell them that, you know, you only have to go to school for part of the year, they think that's a great thing. No school. So I need to have a voice in the book that reflects their own opinions to see, no, that's not what we're rooting for here. You want equal schools. You want to have the same thing. And Rosa Parks, you better believe, understood it. When she was a little girl, she used to actually take her books home every day from school because they were worried that someone was going to come and burn the school down every day. That is a tough little fighter. You know, we've turned Rosa Parks into this matronly old woman as if she's got glasses and a walker. You know how old Rosa Parks was when she sat on that bus? 42 years old. She was in her prime, and she was always a fighter. You know, she used to say, when they said, you got to go to your own water fountains and drink there, she was like, I'm not going to drink there. I'd rather go thirsty. Mm. When they said, you have black-only elevator is down the hall, she would say, you know what, I'll take the stairs. She was always fighting back. We just happened to turn her, history turned her into this kind of matronly old woman. But that's not the right story. That's not the full story. And I love that in I Am Rosa Parks, we get to give kids that real picture of who she was.
Right. And the fact that gesture of defiance on that city bus was not sort of the last straw. No, I've had enough. Finally, I'm going to do something about it. It was actually all but inevitable that would happen with Rosa Parks, because that had already been her legacy. In some respects, although it was a dramatic moment, it should not have come as a surprise to anybody who knew her and knew the way she had lived her life up until then.
Sure, right. We see her as a seamstress. She also worked for the NAACP, making sure that people's voices were heard. The amazing part that I found that I never knew was that when she stood up to that bus driver wasn't a stranger. She actually had been kicked off personally his bus before, that she entered the bus through the front that he was driving, and he said, you got to go enter through the back. And he literally grabbed her by the shirt sleeves and threw her off the bus. So she wasn't standing up to a stranger that day when she stood up on the famous bus. She was standing up to someone who had kicked her off before. She was standing up to another bully in her life. And that takes, to me, even more guts. So, you know, I always, you know, it's funny because I get parents who say to me, I was reading this for my kids and I learned stuff I didn't know myself. And I love, that's the goal of the book, so you can share with your kids these real life heroes.
Mm. Can you say a quick word about the talented person who's responsible for the wonderful illustrations here that accompany your text?
I'd be honored to. Sure. No, our artist is Chris Eliopoulos. And what I love about Chris, you know, when you do a children's book, usually the publisher picks out who the artist will be, and you may not know that person. Chris is a dear friend of mine, and I picked him and said, this is why we need to do this with. And the reason is because Chris's art is kind of is influenced by almost from Peanuts, from Charlie Brown, mixed with Calvin and Hobbes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to do cute. It's easy to do funny. What it's really hard to do is do heart. And that's what those artists had, is heart. And so when he's drawing Rosa Parks as a little girl, or doing I Am Abraham Lincoln or I Am Amelia Earhart, you get so much heart from him. Mm. And suddenly kids fall in love with that, and they react to that in ways that I wish I could take credit for, but it's really a testament to his amazing art. That's what's going to make your kids turn the pages, is he makes them really fun and lovable.
And I appreciate very much that at the end of the book, we have a few photographs of the real
Rosa Parks. I mean, in
that
a sense,
vital to me.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and we have the real
because,
Rosa Parks.
You know what Parks, kids do is but, they read.
Go ahead.
And what kids do is they. I was going to say, I'm sorry. But what kids do is they read the book, and then they, their first question is always, "Is that real?" And so, at the end of every book, we put a double-page spread that shows, you want to see, here's a picture of Rosa Parks on that bus we just told you about. You see the real picture. Hmm. Here she is when she's a little girl in that schoolhouse. That's her school. We didn't make that up. It's real. And kids, their minds explode in that moment because they go, oh, my gosh, this really happened.
Right. This is
and
not make-believe.
That's the vital part.
Absolutely.
That's right. It's, you know, it's one thing when you read a book about a happy dragon and you go, oh, and you take the lesson, you know it's not real. But think of how much more powerful it is when you get to teach a kid that history is not a bunch of dates and facts you memorize, but history is a selection process, and it chooses every single one of us every single day. And the only question is, do you hear the call? And this is the call. These books will hopefully be the call for your child. Let them fall in love with history and see that how important and how powerful they can be themselves.
I Am Rosa Parks is part of a book series called Ordinary People Change the World. It is I Am Rosa Parks, a dial book for young readers, an imprint of Penguin, and the author, Brad Meltzer. Brad Meltzer, thank you so much for creating this beautiful book. We look forward to the other books which are to follow it. And thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Thanks so much, Greg. Always great to be back.
We'll spend part of tomorrow's morning show here on WGTD previewing for you this weekend's 10th annual Sing-Along Messiah, which is occurring at First United Methodist Church here in Kenosha on the corner of Sheridan Road and 60th Street, Sunday evening at 6 p.m. And tomorrow, in a little reversal, I will be in the guest seat, and Dave McGrath, WGTD News Director, will be asking me questions about the Sing-Along Messiahs, which I've been conducting for the last decade. That's coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show here on WGTD. Support for WGTD's Morning Show comes to you from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea is a proud supporter of WGTD's Morning Show. WGTD is also supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu.
On the next Fresh Air, Gay Berlin. We talk with Robert Beachy about his new book on the gay subculture that flourished in Berlin between World War I and the rise of the Nazis, when there were gay-oriented nightclubs, cabarets, films, and publications. Gay prostitution flourished too. So did blackmail. Join us.
Fresh Air, tonight at 7 on WGTD.
Our weather forecast is for partly sunny skies eventually today. Windy and cold, a high of just 28 degrees. Partly cloudy overnight, a low of 20. Partly sunny tomorrow, Thursday, a high of 30 degrees. Partly sunny as well on Friday. Clouding up on Saturday and Sunday. Really no significant precipitation in our forecast until Monday and Tuesday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.